Christian Parenting.
Welcome to the Living Wholehearted Podcast. We are Jeff and Tara Mattson, a husband and wife team who is shrinking the integrity gap in our own lives and helping others do the same. I'm a leadership and organizational development coach, and Tara is a licensed marriage and family therapist.
We believe that if you have a following, you are a leader, and how you lead matters. Whether you are leading in the home, work, or community, we are bringing you biblical, clinical, and relational wisdom to help you in every relationship that matters most to you. None of us do this perfectly, but we are leaning into the reality of our humanity and profound wisdom of grace. Well, it is the end of the year, and it is almost Christmas time, and we're going to talk about forgiveness.
All right.
Because you know what? By the end of the year, I think there's just things that you collect over the years, and part of the reflection is we all want to have gratitude and look back, but there's also been some hurts and wounds, and
they can add up.
They can add up. So that's why we're talking about forgiveness. I mean, it's probably the most common thing I'm talking to my clients about right now. And obviously heading into the holidays, sometimes there needs to be some forgiveness on the other side of, of the holidays as we work through family dynamics. So first, before we dive in, Jeff, start with, like, you grew up in the church. You grew up going to, you know, Wednesday night, Sunday morning, being a part of church culture. Talk about what you generally heard about forgiveness and what were some of the messages you got growing up.
Yeah, I mean, it was as clear in the tradition that I grew up in that it was forgiveness was, I mean, you forgive as Christ forgave you. And
that's,
you know,
biblical.
Yeah, absolutely. When I was, I came to faith as a second grader, and I remember that it was really a clear a connection with God and with Jesus. And so growing up in church culture, it was just really normal to think that I'd been forgiven. And then as, of course, I grew up in middle school and high school, my theology became deeper and more informed. But that sense of what Christ had done for me, that compels me to show forgiveness to others. I wouldn't learn about the difference between forgiveness and reconciliation till much later. So I think that in my experience growing up, and I wasn't privy to, I would say, you know, lots of examples of where people forgave well and modeled reconciliation or forgave and didn't reconcile in terms of continued relationship with certain people. I didn't have a lot of those examples. So it was just kind of a big picture perspective. But I also felt that sense of, I know what I was forgiven from. I believe that. And because of that, I'm compelled to want to be more like Jesus in that towards others.
So. Yeah. Okay. So you're covering kind of the baseline that most of us think about if you've grown up in any sort of Christian tradition, that forgiveness really is, I've received forgiveness, God has forgiven me, so therefore I can offer that. But not always the difference between what is forgiving and what is reconciling. We sometimes mesh that together and think they have to go hand in hand.
I'll say this, that I had a lot of ambivalence as it related to real relationships in my journey, both in my family and outside my family, where there was trauma about my faith and forgiveness and what it would look like. I grew up in scenarios and in environments where there was lots of trauma, but it was all just sort of under the surfaces, if you will, and gatherings always continued to happen. And there was just,
we did life regardless of the hurts.
I would learn later about just kind of how unhealthy that is to be, and the difference between forgiveness and having reconciliation, or it's to be able to continue to maintain relationship and presence and time and all of that. It's very nuanced here, but I felt in my spirit, even as a little guy at different times, just an uncomfortability. I couldn't name that. I would hold that. I would say that in many cases, ambivalence was like a companion that I didn't really want. It was always with me as it related to people and broken relationships mm-hmm. that I was around. And yet we're all having a party and doing yeah. things. And yet behind the scenes, there was nothing celebrated between, you know, these two parties, mm-hmm. for example. So it was really confusing. And maybe some of you as listeners out there can relate to that, a sense of confusion about this as a kid mm-hmm. growing up, even in your young adulthood years. It was later that I would really learn about forgiveness. I think the first thing that stood out to me that was so helpful, I remember doing a study as this was, I think, pre-kids, but right around that time. Someone had shared that forgiveness was really letting people, another person, off your hook. Like, and I'm a fisherman, so the idea of something being on my hook is a good thing, right?
Everything always goes back to fishing with you.
Off my hook, but they would, the other person wasn't off God's hook per se, especially if there was where you're choosing to forgive because it's, in line with our theology, what God would ask us to do. You're releasing, you know, whatever control, whatever resentment, whatever things mm-hmm. that you're having, you're releasing that into God's capable hands. This is, and it was so clear to me, like, oh my gosh, yes, he loves me. He wants us to forgive so that it does. He knew it would destroy us actually through resentment and bitterness and other things to hold unforgiveness mm-hmm. in our hearts. So he models this. He shows us to do that. And I remember feeling that release, knowing that it didn't mean that they were off his hook. He's the perfect judge. He's the mm-hmm. the one that holds all the details. He knows how to perfectly balance mercy and grace with justice. And I'm not capable of doing that perfectly. And so that was my first real lesson, I think, where a lot of ambivalence went away for me about forgiveness.
Yeah. So you're talking about the forgiveness between us and God. So I think that's where I want to start, is there's a forgiving process where it's an intimate place with God mm-hmm. and others. So we can forgive someone, whether they're alive or not, or whether they've owned it or not.
Yeah.
There's a process of letting someone off of your justice hook of trying to get back or revenge. And maybe we're not overtly doing that, but we're doing that in our hearts, keeping our hearts hard and being like, I won't get hurt again, right? And so there's this process you're talking about that we do with God the Father and in our spiritual journeys. And if someone's not walking with God at all, you can do this in kind of a kinesthetic way of being able to get it outside of your mind and your heart. But the easiest way is to do it with God, who is a really good judge and knows whether someone needs mercy or whether they need justice. So that process there is different than the reconciliation process between two people, which requires both of the parties. So I can forgive, let's just mm-hmm. use you and me. I can forgive you, Jeff.
Yep.
It'd be really hard to be married to you if I didn't work through my unforgiveness. But I can forgive you for something that you maybe never know that you did.
All right.
But in terms of having trust and intimacy, mm-hmm. we have to work through that together. Mm-hmm. And there needs to be a process that happens between the two of us. Mm-hmm. If, let's say, it's between someone who's been violated and abused, which is where I've had to wrestle this forgiveness process out in the counseling office with lots of survivors of abuse, mm-hmm. is forgiving. If that person never owns it, or mm-hmm. let's say they own it, but they haven't proven they're trustworthy and they won't do it again, mm-hmm. I can still forgive without reconciling. And so let's talk first about forgiveness.
Okay.
Then let's talk about reconciliation. Right. Okay. So first step, forgiveness is not, you said, reconciliation. What else is it not? Some of the myths that we have that we hold and we think, okay, if I forgive, then, can you think of any?
Let's see here. Forgiveness, does it mean that you have to, that you have to have the same kind of relationship that you once had?
That we have to go right back to whatever.
Whatever it was.
Okay.
Yeah, right. Okay, so that'd be one myth. It doesn't mean that you have to go right back to where you were.
Yeah. Forgiveness isn't forgetting. That's often one. I think even those outside the church, right, talk about, well, just forgive and forget. And I'm always like, I don't think God forgives and forgets, even though Psalm 135 or 103 says that he removes our sin as far as the east is from the west. But doesn't say it like got erased. It just means that he remembers no more. He chooses not to be in front of him and to see us through the lens of our sin. It says, I choose to see you through the lens of Jesus and your forgiveness. It's a choice matter. It's not a like, poof, it's now gone. Because I want to say this, as someone who's been, if you've been offended and harmed, it's actually important for you to remember that as part of your story and as part of wisdom. Like, I want to remember, like, what happened when I did that, and I got to be more careful next time.
I just think grabbing kind of the whole of Scripture, God asks us to remember things all over the place.
I mean, don't forget
all of the memorials and all the altars that were formed from what he did and how things happened and what. So, and he's sovereign and omniscient and omnipresent. How could we say that he would forget, that he can't actually remember? No, he's all these things. He chooses to put it aside. Mm-hmm. Out of love. And that's the message behind that. So yeah, you're right. You need to remember, especially in the process of repair or deepening intimacy and trust with somebody that where you are experiencing forgiveness, remembering actually it makes forgiveness full and complete.
That's what when we think forgive as Christ forgave us, I think God could hold all my records before me. Mm-hmm. And when I think about trying to forgive somebody else in the process, there is beauty in being able to go through each of those offenses and to say, I choose to forgive each of those because I remember the pain and the hurt, which I'm jumping ahead to the process. Mm-hmm. But when Jesus died on the cross, it wasn't a flippant like, oh, well, I kind of don't forget it anymore. I don't remember it anymore. It's a, I remember and I am doing this on behalf. And so that's this process that shifts the way forgiveness is an intentionality.
Yeah.
It requires a process. And actually, none of us really like doing this process, but very few Christian discipleships teach people how to forgive. They say you are to forgive, but nobody actually models it or walks through a process, which is what we want to do today.
And that's where the clinical wisdom here comes in to dovetail so well with the biblical wisdom and mandates, if you will. So clinical, biblical, and relational wisdom, they all work together. It all comes from God. He made us. So that's, let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it. Okay, so the first step in forgiving, let's say it's between God and I alone first, is to actually name the injury. So who, I often have to talk with my clients about, you know, you might just have this big wad of anger, but kind of going through the wad, you go, maybe there's an institution or it's men or women in general, like you're needing to work through a group of people or it's the family. It's not necessarily a person per se. And that can be a process, but starting to name first, who is the person who's offended me? And then the listing out all of the behaviors. And the key here is not putting the behavior as someone's identity, separating that they might be a child or they are a child of God who loves Jesus, who has done something wrong, and to look at the behavior and not just, you can't go through and be like, they're just a selfish jerk, which they might be, but what was the behavior that made you think that they're selfish and they're a jerk? So really being clear and cleaning out that closet that you shoved back there of all the records of wrong that 1 Corinthians 13 talks about.
Yeah, naming that is so important, and that's the separation of the behavior from the identity is what God did for us, right?
Yeah.
When he hung on that cross and he gave his life before any of us were even born, he did that thinking about us, and the scriptures say while we were yet still enemies, he died for us.
Yeah.
And so.
So we can do this even if somebody isn't repentant or.
And the idea too, as believers is that, you know, we are, once we become believers in Christ, we oftentimes the church, I think in some ways is working on changing this narrative, which is just important. I mean, the emphasis that I grew up with is that you're a sinner, you're sinners, we're sinners. Even as a Christian, we're sinners. Actually, Jesus made us saints. Who still sin?
Yeah, our identity.
Our identity is seen as children of God, as saints who still sin. And that's a more biblical understanding about where we are.
So we're separating behavior from personhood, which helps those of us who have like an internal protection of being like, I don't really want to say out loud what they did because they really are a good person or they didn't mean it. And I go, we're not judging motives. We're judging behavior. So if I often will go through the whose fault game here and I'll be like going back and forth and saying, okay, Jeff, if I, you know, elbowed you and then you thought I did that on purpose and it hurt you and then you spit in my face and then I called you a name and then you kicked me under the table, right? Who did what and why? Now, we're not judging the motive behind it. We're just judging the behavior. It hurt when she elbowed me. It hurt when she called me a name. And so it's really listing those things out and then attaching a feeling or a consequence to that. Like, what did that cost me? What did that cost the people I love? I mean, I'm thinking about big offenses, you know, a church pastor who's had a moral failure or a parent who got divorced. I mean, the behavior is divorce and there's a lot of reasons why that happened. And yet, what did it cost you? What was the effects on you? And what came out of that divorce? A lot of arguing and a lot of crying and pain. And I lost my parent for a while they were grieving and I felt alone. So that's the next phase of claiming the injury and really going through a grieving process, a process of letting ourselves feel sad, angry, bargaining about what we could have done different, how God could have done something different, and then moving through into an acceptance. But I think we want to go right to choosing forgiveness mm-hmm. and we're missing mm-hmm. out on the process mm-hmm. of allowing our hearts to be heard as much as our heads be heard.
This is your clinical kind of phrase that I share all the time with other people. It's like, you got to feel it to heal it. You got to get in there. Now, the next step is really kind of getting in touch with the tendency that we might have to blame the injurer, right? And so often we blame completely other people mm-hmm. or we become overly responsible for the situation, especially when we've been hurt. So we got to sort through, you know, what we can own, what's our responsibility, if there is any in that process. Mm-hmm. And this takes some time to reflect. Yeah. And what would be their ownership, the other party, the offending party in that scenario is, so you're getting in touch with the humanity of yourself, having a sobriety for being humble in this process, realizing that you may have missed something and God wants to show you in this process. And so in some ways, God's preparing you through this journey mm-hmm. to go and to connect to the other person. But you got to do this internal work first. And to be able to regulate the impulse of just going and blaming others.
Yeah, or owning. So there's always a bent of like, I could be like, I'm so sorry you spit in my face because I started it and you shouldn't have spit or, you know, you spit and then you kicked me and that was really my fault. So that's kind of this idea of separating. What did I participate in? And what was your part? And to let you own that.
Sounds like you're parenting two young children.
I know. Okay. It's a great example. I mean, I use this with little kids. I use it with married couples. I mean, and they're, you know, at the end of the day, hopefully we're not kicking and spitting at each other. But but at the end of the day, there is parts that maybe I participated in.
Yeah.
And I love that separation. Well, this is another one that we often skip. And I will say, mostly spiritual leaders, those of us who are well-meaning, we want to skip right to choosing to forgive so that you're free of the poison that unforgiveness brings. Mm-hmm. But we really need to establish some boundaries and restoring power to a person, especially in the more significant offenses that have happened where there's been violation after violation and there's a sense of powerlessness and helplessness. So boundaries, before we move towards that final step of I choose to hand it all over to you, God, and to let you be the judge, I have to ask the question with the Lord or maybe with a mentor, mm-hmm. with a counselor, what do I need to restore safety? Mm-hmm. To feel like if I let go of this offense, what else do I need to be different? And so that you don't kick me anymore.
Maybe we need to find a different example for adults.
It's actually one I use all the time and makes a lot of sense to people. So I know it feels silly because we're not kicking and screaming at each other, but I do want to say.
Never spat on you.
Yeah, you never spit on me. This is not our reality. But in choosing power, it would say, what do I need? And you know what? I need some space or I need to not respond to emails for a while or I need to say no thank you the next time this person invites me to something, or I need to stop following them on Instagram, or, right? We need to think through what's going to help me heal. Yeah. Because this is a wound.
Yeah.
And if I forgive without establishing power, I will keep putting salt in the wound.
So we talk about this a lot. Healthy systems have both people, both parties have a voice, right? Mm-hmm. And so if there's been an inequity where there's been an offending party that's kind of repeatedly done this and they have most of the power in the relationship, the person on the other side, as you're saying, needs to restore some equity and power in that. What do I need? And needs are not sin. Needs are tied to some things that that God's put inside of us to help us understand mm-hmm. that what healthy relationships look like. So I like the fact that we would consider, and maybe you do need to get some extra help sometimes sorting that out with mm-hmm. a counselor or a trusted friend or somebody that can hold the confidence to explore what you might need in order to feel safe, right? As you're working to forgive and so that you go into the conversations with the person at some point, when you go into the conversations with them, you're prepared to share and from a place of understanding, having done this work, mm-hmm. what do I need in this relationship to move forward if that's a possibility?
And let me just clarify that you may never, ever talk to this person again.
You might
be forgiving somebody that was in third grade who was your bully.
Or who
and you're not
away.
Going to be going back and restoring, but you do... You are sometimes the boundary is really more about yourself and saying, mm-hmm. I'm no longer going to journal about this anymore. I'm no longer going to vent about it to my friends, or it's a part that I'm literally. So sometimes those boundaries are more about us than they are about a space or an environment or another person.
Yeah.
So really just starting to slow down and say, forgiveness is not something that just happens. Jesus, there's a whole process. When we say forgive as Jesus forgave us, there is a whole process of Jesus dying on a cross and painful process of what he did for us. Mm-hmm. And so that's a flippant statement when we say that, well, forgive because Jesus forgave you. And I'm like, it cost him everything. And so this process of forgiveness is honoring that. Mm-hmm. And giving a voice to the pain and the offenses and not being flippant.
Yeah.
So that when we literally go and we say, Jesus, now it's yours. I'm taking you off my hook.
Yeah.
Or taking them off my hook and giving it to you. There's been a process of really honoring and grieving and healing. And now I'm really likely ready to hand it over and to not take it back.
Yeah, I think it might be helpful as I hear you describe the process. I know that you're saying that there needs to be a quality to forgiveness. And that's the heartbeat of this.
That's but the more deep stuff.
Some of our listeners might have get the idea that maybe we're trying to control the process of forgiveness in all of these stages. That's not the point. The motive is to make it thorough, to make it qualitatively complete and full. And this isn't a man-made sort of clinical process. We use the information and the wisdom of the clinical to that dovetails and fits so well within scripture.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesus took his whole life, actually. It wasn't just the cross.
Yeah.
He came, actually, and his entire life was preparing him for forgiving us.
Christmas is about forgiveness at the end of the day.
Yeah, so this mm-hmm. this is serious. And what you're saying is like it requires us to go deeper into the quality of what it actually means. Anybody that's out there that offers the kind of flippant statement or requires you to forgive, and this happens in spiritual abusive systems, mm-hmm. red flag, you know, that's requiring it like that. Some people, and based even in their wiring, might be more prone to want things to happen faster, like forgiveness. And my wiring is, we use kind of that driver, that builder space. Just everything tends to happen faster in that space.
Your wiring does play a role in how you forgive.
And there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that way I was wired, but I've learned so much about the importance and some certain things in wisdom and leaning into you and others that you can't do certain things fast. It takes quality. It takes wisdom. And so that's been healthy for me. And maybe you're out there listening to that and could relate. So,
well, let's walk through that real quick, because I think it's a really good point, Jeff, that wiring plays a role in how fast or how thorough this process will be. Our builders are to the point. And so this process can be bullet point, done, done, done. I'm moving on. And in reconciliation that we'll get to, often, it is fast for builders.
This is our CVI, the core values index that we reference and use a lot and have in this podcast.
Yeah. So, and you can go learn more about. But when it comes to merchants are talk and listen learners, and they need to do more verbal processing and it might need to be more of a journaling or a talking through to feel things deeply. That's how they move towards this through this process. An innovator is going to think more contextually. And they're going to try, probably hang out. I would say more innovators hang out in the bartering place where it's a coulda, shoulda, woulda. What could I have done? Because we're problem solvers. Mm. So we tend to hang out with, well, they did this, but I could have done something different. I was foolish or I trusted them, right? And we're taking too much blame. So the innovators can often do too much trying to think around a context of something rather than just move through the process. Mm. And the bankers have to do a very linear, thorough. They've got a whole jury who needs to really look at all the facts,
all the data
and to roll out the historical. So that's going to be a lot longer of a process for a banker, but they take the longest to forgive because just literally in process just takes longer.
The coolest part about that though, for them is that when they say, I forgive you, they mean it.
Yeah.
It's because their process has been satisfied. And so that wiring plays a role, and you can see how two different wirings that are in conflict with one another and that are trying to figure out forgiveness, it can get really tricky, right?
Maybe it can. And we're going, what's taking so long for you? And then the other one's like, doesn't really feel like you're sorry, you know? And so we're moving more towards the reconciliation piece. But when you're doing this with your own process of your own heart, the question is for 2023, or your entire life, if you want to do some good forgiveness cleaning out, you know, the Corinthians love chapter that we all love and reference every wedding. Go, love doesn't keep records of wrong. And
First
I was like,
Corinthians
it's
13. Yes.
First Corinthians
yes.
13.
Yes.
The idea that God put that in there is important because he knew he would keep records of wrong. It's a human nature to keep records of wrong. And so this is another myth that I hear from people of like, oh, things don't bother me, you know, no big deal. Forgive and forget, you know, and honestly, if you do that too long, it's like not brushing your teeth. And eventually there's some cavities that start to build and
bad breath.
Yeah. Well, bad breath. But there's a side effect of not doing inventory of our own hearts. So at the end of a year, I actually spent some time with the Lord asking the Lord, in from Psalm 139, search me and show me if there be any wicked, which I prefer the translation that says anxious, way in me. And so that I can be led in the way everlasting in a straight way that's a pure of heart. Mm-hmm. And I ask him, show me what are the records of wrong that I'm holding? Who are the people that I've still got some residue with? Mm-hmm. And to do this on a regular basis doesn't mean I'm going and talking to these people. It just is my own inventory of my own heart. But if you've never done this, it means you might be going back quite a ways, because if you're holding records of wrong from 2023 and you've been in relationship with them for 20 years, there might be a pattern here that you've got to forgive.
Yeah. And for many of you that listen to our podcast and are leaders, you might be a pastor. You might be a missionary. You might be somebody who is in charge of a Christian university. You can be a leader, and you may be preaching and talking about all of these things, and really from a cognitive space, passing on truth, you know, to people all the time about this.
Yeah.
But if you haven't experienced this, if this hasn't translated from here down to your heart and through relationships, first and foremost with your relationship with God, and experience the depth of quality of what forgiveness looks like, and gotten really in touch with that, you are, There's room to grow. You're offering things that that aren't coming from a place of authenticity in that space. Even though it's the gospel, even though it's the truth, won't that draw you to a deeper understanding and draw you into going back? You know, we talk about the looking back with our leaders all the time.
Yeah.
Why? Leaders all the time are wondering, why do I have to look back in the past?
What's the point?
What's the past have to do with my present and my future? It doesn't. And the more bravado that leaders bring to that kind of a statement, the more of a tell it is actually that they actually are the ones that need it the most. To look back, to do the hard work, to, we say, get our baggage down, to carry on size with Christ, with God, with others, so that we can be available to others, actually more available emotionally and spiritually, physically, to serve others. And that's what we're talking about here. So maybe for some of you, it's resonating as the sun comes through the window here and changes the look of our podcast. A ray of light on this point.
We'll take it.
A ray
of
light on this profound point I'm making.
It seems like God is shining his light right on you right now as you say that.
I listen to the Holy Spirit here. If there's some things that he's bringing to mind, it's good to unload with him in this process.
Yeah, this is an invitation. It's a beautiful invitation. It's not meant to be something feared.
It's a good word.
And even like that blaming, the step of separating the blame between putting it on the offender and you taking ownership, that right alone can be transformative for leaders. Yeah. To be like, there are some things that I've been trying to hide or pretend that aren't impacting my relationships. And there can be some really powerful ways that we can move forward there. It has been a joy for Jeff and I to walk with you this year. And if this podcast has impacted your life, you're not alone. You might not know that we're a part of the Christian Parenting Podcast Network of 37 total shows that reach hundreds of thousands of other people like you. Christian Parents' mission is to help parents all around the world grow into perfectly imperfect parents that God created them to be so that they can confidently raise the next generation of culture-changing Christians. They provide digital and printed resources, encouragement that is rooted in biblical truth, and they have an entire network of faith-based podcasts just for families, including this one. But creating resources and running podcasts is just not free. Just like everything else in the world, these things take time and financial commitments. And as a donor-based ministry, Christian Parenting relies on generous donors like you to continue to make podcasts like this one happen. So if you love this podcast, and I hope you do, would you consider giving a year-end gift to Christian Parenting? We're seeking to raise $23,661.58 by December 31st so that we can continue to produce these products and these podcasts and reach even more parents in 2024. Every gift matters and every gift makes a difference. You can give your best gift by December 31st to help end the year strong and reach our goal. Give today at cpgive.org. That's cpgive.org. I do want to talk about reconciliation, and you can't reconcile until you've done this forgiveness process with the Lord. But the final step of forgiveness is what?
Yeah, choosing to forgive. And it's right. A choice. You know, it's amazing when you drill down on this. I mean, oftentimes people will just be like, we have to forgive. Physically, we get to choose whether or not we will say these words and forgive. And that's where, you know, God has set it up for us relationally. The designer of relationships, he set this up for us. We get to choose, and he wants it to come from our heart. And so when we align ourselves with him and we recognize that he forgave us and we choose to forgive others with him first, it creates the environment that then allows us to release people from our pseudo hook. Really, yeah. We have no hook, but you can live your whole life that way. And there's some that you've seen and known that do this, and it's not healthy. So you choose to forgive. You say, I choose, and you name things, and then you release. And there's ways of memorializing this. And I've done this where I've thrown things in the fire and just let it go. I've written things down that I've thrown into a fire. And
you really like fire.
Fire is good. Okay.
I've thrown eggs. So I've written in Sharpie notes on eggs and then seen them and splattered them across trees. I've thrown rocks into lakes. There's lots of ways that you can. I have had clients, I've never done this, but I've had clients use pottery where they'll go to a dollar store, buy a bunch of pottery, and then write those offenses and then smash it. Mm. And there's some cathartic way of being able to see it shatter and to move into 1,000 pieces.
That integrates our body with our heart and our mind. Hey, that sounds good. That sounds clinical.
You're funny. You're funny. Okay. So let's talk practically, because we're talking about these are little offenses or they can be massive offenses. So if this is about, I just want to say, if this is about abuse, this is a long process. Sometimes I've spent years working through this process with people who have been offended, especially by parents. or have been sexually violated, or spouses that they've been married to and had attachments. So just, we're not flippantly speaking. Mm-hmm. This is a process. But this can also apply as quickly to like those daily offenses we get in marriage and in friendships and with our children. And
so that can happen quicker.
Yeah. Right? And so one of the things we want to talk about is, how do you reconcile on the everyday matters and then to do reconciliation on the more significant matters? And I think the first step is to do this work and then to consider, do I want reconciliation with this person? I think it's a prayerful question. And if I'm married to you, of course I want reconciliation, because I cannot have a healthy relationship, I cannot have trust, and I cannot have intimacy without reconciliation. So I got to work towards that. Now I only have one half of the equation. Jeff has the other half of the equation. So on a regular basis, I'm going to give you a little kudos here, but early on in our marriage, I don't think I had ever had anybody in my entire life ask me for forgiveness. Not one person. And then Jeff Mattson comes into my life, and it was like easy for you. You were like, will you forgive me for, you know, being frustrated yesterday? Or will you forgive me for walking out to and showing up 5 minutes late? I mean, you would ask forgiveness, not on flippant way, but in a very sincere, will you forgive me? Mm-hmm. And the power of that invitation really changed my understanding of how easy this can be. Because in my mind, it took like a lot of effort, and it had to be a really big offense for me to say, will you forgive me?
Yeah.
And that really changed a lot of things in my own heart towards my ability to forgive others, but also to receive forgiveness. So talk about that in the posture of really going to someone and saying, will you forgive me?
Well, thank you for that compliment, by the way. I guess I made a lot of mistakes.
Well, that's not what I meant.
Of course,
you weren't supposed to take it that way.
Of course. That was a joke.
It's supposed to be a compliment.
I thank you for the compliment. I do. That's why I started that way. You know, it does. People, I think, generally do think it's a big thing. It's amazing with my coaching clients that when I talk about the difference between apologizing and saying, I'm sorry, to will you forgive me? And will you forgive me is such a powerful thing. It's such a different deal. I'm sorry means nothing in society today, nothing. But will you forgive me, placing yourself in a humble position underneath the person that you're speaking to, is a game changer. And they can choose that they may not be able to right now. They may choose to say no. That's a possibility. It's a human possibility to say no. They also might say, I want to, but I can't yet. I need some more time, you know? And so it's just powerful to be able to deal with the reality. You know, we've taught our girls this process. Mm-hmm. They're now in their teen years, and they've done this with each other, but we're trying to prepare them for what real thorough, a healthy understanding, a biblical understanding of what forgiveness looks like and what it means for when they're disappointed by somebody, when they're hurt by somebody, or when they hurt someone else. Mm-hmm. And it's a practice. We got to practice on the little things, like you were saying, that can happen quicker, than so that we're more prepared for bigger things that are inevitably going to happen, because we are saints who still sin and are broken and just, you know, that are in need of God's help in this journey.
But well, it really does help us with our pride issue and that word humility when we say out loud, will you forgive me? Now, I've got to make sure I'm speaking to a lot of codependents who will own things that aren't theirs. So that's where you've got to recognize, is this something that you did or you can take responsibility for? But ownership is a key piece versus just trying to repair the relationship. So I apologize or I'm sorry feels really passive. Even if it's sincere, it's passive and it doesn't invite the reconciliation of the both and. And so will you forgive me allows the other party to have a voice, like you said, and they can choose how they want to respond. And then when they choose, like for me, learning to say, I choose to forgive you is powerful, because I'm reminding my own soul, you chose this, Tara. So now act in according to your choice, right? Align with what you are saying and then how you're actually treating Jeff. Because my wiring and merchant might want to still make him pay for it in the feeling side. You know, like I might say I choose to forgive you, but I'm going to pout for a little bit longer. But that would be the immature side of me. But the more mature side says, I choose to forgive you and now I'm going to align. And if I'm not ready, then I have to be truthful and say, I need a little bit more time. But when I'm ready to say I choose to forgive you, then I got to come and say that and not just leave the guy hanging or vice versa. And doing this and teaching this to our kids is really important practice because, again, many don't go through their life knowing what this looks like or feels like. And then if it's a more, well, before we move to the bigger offenses, is there anything else you want to say there about the smaller offenses and the rhythm of forgiveness in the home?
Yeah. The only thing that came to my mind was, is that there's some beauty in having a commitment to showing grace to one another on little things.
Okay. Yes.
Cause we can be, even like some people are like, do we have to do this process for everything? Like everything? No. So,
oh, that's exhausting.
Yeah. When you love the other person and you have a rhythm of being gracious to one another, I would say the things that, this is just my gauge as for this, if there's things that are kind of repeating or coming up in me that I feel like warrant some thought and process and to share, that's the filter. And I'm using that and I'm doing that with God. Before I just let it all always come out of my mouth, I'm trying to just sometimes I'll just chalk it up to say, "Love Tara," you know, and
all her quirks,
and she would do the same with me. And there's a general commitment to that. So you're trying to stay in the bigger picture of the love and the graciousness that you want to show one another. These are the things that I think that repeat and show up and start gaining some voice inside that you want to attune to and then move through this process so that you can keep short accounts with the persons that you love. Yeah.
Okay. So you're saying make sure that you've done inventory in your own heart. Is this a pattern or is this just a contextually a bad day?
And you're not picking everything.
Yeah. And I do think it's important that if you ask forgiveness, so if I say, will you forgive me? I have to be willing to talk through and let you share, or I would need to share how it affected me. I think sometimes going straight to forgiveness and not having the conversation of impact is what gets lost sometimes, and the patterns will continue.
Yeah, so it feels incomplete.
Yeah. So there might be times where you think it's a short thing and actually that really deeply hurt me. And I have to be able to say, can we talk about that more? I really need to process what happened there before I actually move towards forgiveness. Yeah. Now we're talking about some real mature, you have to have time for this. You have to make time for this and it has to be a priority. And honestly, there are times where I'm like, we got to do some forgiveness work, but we're so busy this week. And honestly, the bigger picture of, I want to have nothing stand in the way of our relationship. So I'm going to put it on the calendar and we're going to have a talk and we're going to process about it. Or we're going to go to counseling for it if it's some of the bigger stuff as couples, or for those that have family members or friends or colleagues that continually are part of difficult relationships.
You're going to get some help.
You're going to get some help.
Yeah, healthy people get help.
Healthy people get help. I love that. So that idea of being able to have time to talk about in between, will you forgive me? And I choose to forgive you. And then the hope is that as all of this process is happening, that it is by God's power that he does the rest of the work. Mm-hmm. He changes our hearts. He helps us heal from the past. And oftentimes when we're explaining the difference between mind, body, heart, and soul, we're reminding people that emotions are some of the last things to catch up to what you choose in your mind, what you do with your body, and how you, the decisions you make in your soul. Emotions kind of, they're the last to catch up. And so recognizing that you can forgive and say out loud, but you might not feel it quite yet.
Yeah.
And to try to move in the direction of the choice and allow the heart
for
to
all
be
the
in,
right reasons.
Yeah.
And you know, those of you that are listening, many of you may have, you remember that feeling, the feeling that when it did catch up or when you had it, whenever you had it, if it happened sooner than later, but you remember that feeling, you did the work. It felt incredible. It felt freedom. This is why you do the work. You do it so that you can be right with God and as best as you can right with others. Mm-hmm. He created our relationships and knew that when they would be fractured, that he created this process and he modeled it because he loves us and knows that that's what we need as his creation to flourish and thrive again. And so it's worth it. It's a process. You can't have lots of expectations in this. You got to grow in wisdom and experience of these processes so that you can experience what God had for you when he designed you to find how to repair as best as you can. And with him in that process, the freedom that comes from him, the other needs that he meets in that, as we yield to his design and his plan.
Yeah. And we didn't throw out a lot of scripture, you know, in line by line, but every step here is rooted in what the whole of the scripture and the different passages and what Jesus modeled for us in being able to forgive as he forgives us. And so it's an invitation. It's a gift. And those of us who follow Jesus and have the Holy Spirit helping us, it's easier, but it's still not an easy process. So reconciliation is not forgiveness. We're just going to remind you of that. And forgiving does not mean automatically you trust someone. Trust ultimately comes through time and consistency in the right direction. So again, if Jeff and I, we keep using us as an example, but if we're working through something and we forgive each other, but do we trust that we're not going to do that again or that we're really going to honor the need or the request there? Trust in that area comes as we are consistent in that. And so that's where we have to be very careful, especially as leaders who are helping others, our children, or those in our wake of influence, to understand that we don't want to push people in restoring a relationship where trust hasn't been built.
Yeah.
And it takes time.
Take slow.
And I'm very passionate. Both Jeff and I are very passionate of recognizing that we are adding to spiritual abuse when we force people to restore trust before they've done a lot of this deeper work with God and with each other. So just want to end with that as a reminder that this isn't like a one big bow and everybody lives happily ever after. But it is a direction towards freedom. And that idea, we didn't come up with this. I don't even know who came up with this, but the idea of forgiving is really no longer drinking the poison of what unforgiveness brings, the bitterness.
Oh yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Whoever
came up with it was like, forgiveness is like, you know, or lack of forgiveness is like you drinking the poison that you gave to someone that you wanted someone else to drink and hoping that they would die,
pay.
You know, or pay. But it's actually you.
That's so evil.
Unforgiveness is you drinking that poison. Yeah.
And it hardens our heart. And I always think about being, you know, living a long, long life. I mean, all of us have been, maybe this is someone in your family or someone you met at the grocery store, but who's lived a long, long life and they're holding a lot of unforgiveness and you can just feel it. It's palatable. There's bitterness. Everybody annoys them, right? And so keeping our hearts soft, staying attuned to God's voice and to one another requires us to do this work. So as you think about and you reflect back on all the goodness of what God has done, some of the things that have happened this year, also do the work of doing some inventory of your own heart. That is what we're doing here at Living Wholehearted is really trying to help you show you the how. This was a quick overview, but we want to encourage you that we're here. Mm-hmm. We're here as executive coaches. We have a whole licensed clinical team to come alongside with you for those deeper wounds. We're really trying to help a lot of church systems and, even businesses really learn how to restore trust and to build cultures where this is their norm, where we actually deal with offenses and we don't build and live in records of wrong.
Yeah, people, whether they identify as believers in Christ or not, we all need this wisdom, need these solutions because the world is so fractured as it is. So, yeah, take the time. It's worth it. And then teach others how to do this in a thorough and a qualitative way and reap the benefits of this. It yields freedom. It helps us in our relationship with God and growing towards wholeness and integrity.
Yeah.
All right. Until next time.
No.
No? You have something you wanted to say?
Yep.
Go ahead.
I want to talk a little bit about where we're going for next
year. Where are we going?
Yeah. I want to talk about next year for 2024. Jeff and I are switching the podcast to longer episodes. We're going to be doing a lot more talking and sharing like what you heard today. So if you want more of the things that we're working through with our clients and teaching in our cohorts and rewriting in our books and just participating with us, you'll get more of our voices. And we're hoping to have more guests who we know personally.
Yeah, more really, selectiveness on our guests.
And we want to be able to introduce you to some people that are near and dear to us. And the last thing is we're moving from a weekly cadence to an every other week cadence. As we shift and understand what we are doing and the call that we have, we just want you to know we're moving to every other longer, more deep conversations. And hopefully it'll be more nourishing for you.
Yeah, so stay now. With us. Stay with us. And until then.
Be the leader you would follow.
That's right.
This podcast is powered by Living Wholehearted, Courageous Girls, and the Christian Parenting Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us in this critical movement of shrinking our integrity gaps between what we preach and live.